coming to you today, 12 stories up in Midtown Manhattan. We welcome you to another episode of the NHL Executive Suite. I'm Deb Placey, your host, and our special guest today is the Chief Marketing Officer of the National Hockey League, Heidi Browning. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
So your bio on Twitter says, digital passionista dedicated to peace, love, and ROI. Now, I had to look up what ROI was. Return on investment. So that's your sort of intersection, right, of those peace, love, and return on investment. What does that mean to you?
So I developed this tagline when I first joined Twitter because I felt like it best represented me. I am all things digital. I am absolutely passionate and in love with all things digital, and so fortunate to have been part of the digital world from the beginning of my career. And as we know, it's part of our everyday lives. So absolutely passionate about digital. But I also believe that you can be a strong leader by being positive and being kind. And most importantly, you can still deliver results. So the peace, the love, and the ROI is all about leading with positivity, kindness, and delivering excellence.
Well, I started with social media because that's your space, one of your spaces at least. And I really think the NHL did such an important thing in that they recognized very early on that they had really tech-savvy fans. Before we get into some other things, and we'll talk a lot about that, we're going to talk about how you got here. We're going to talk about where you want to go with the league. I want to explain to our listeners what you do and why we're excited to have you on. What is your day like, and what is, with a very fancy title as Chief Marketing Officer, what does that mean that you do for the league?
So what our main mission here is to grow our sport, to grow our fan base, and essentially make sure that we are relevant with younger fans. And my two areas of expertise in this are social media, which we'll talk about a lot today, and also fan engagement as it relates to our entire digital and data-driven database. So we have all these incredible touch points with our fans. They tell us a lot about themselves. They come to experience our games live, and they engage with us through our digital and social media channels. When we can harness all of that data, that helps us understand who the fans are. It helps us understand how can we personalize our marketing communications to them, how can we personalize offers to them for tickets and merchandise, and really make it a personalized and customized experience for their teams and needs.
Now, one thing that I thought was fascinating was I read that you often go to games and sit in the stands, and you take in the experience of a game as your consumer does, your customer, your fan. Tell us about, do you do it a lot? You like to go by yourself? How did that come about?
Oh, yeah. First of all, I love to go to visit the clubs, and I love to see how the entire fan experience works. And my favorite part is sitting with the fans, but my other favorite part is meeting the staff in the buildings. There's such great pride that these folks have in each and every one of their arenas, to the person who's operating the elevator buttons, to the person who's cleaning up the dust bunnies in the tunnels. Everyone has such great pride and such great stories. And I love finding out how long they've worked there. And you find out some of these people have been Zambonis on the ice for 20 years, like working in, the elevator 30 years. And so that to me is such a sign of great leadership and great experience that transcends everything and then transfers to the fan experience. So I love that. I do love to sit with the fans. My first game I went to here in New York when I first joined the league, I had tickets and I was taking a friend, but his daughter got sick, so he couldn't go. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go by myself. So I went to the Rangers game and I, sat down, had great seats down low. And there was this group of men in front of me. And I could tell that it was four generations of family there. And they were having a great time. And they looked over their shoulders and kept looking over their shoulders. And they finally turned around and said, why are you here by yourself? They couldn't understand why I would come to hockey by myself. And so I explained, it was my first day of school at the NHL. It was my first game. And they were so lovely. They ended up inviting me over for Thanksgiving dinner. We have a whole relationship where we, comment and communicate at the beginning and end of every season. I sent them a bunch of gear. But to me, that was my first experience of the hockey family. This is hockey, right? And that's what you see in everything that we do with our avid fan base, and why I want to take those stories and help casual fans understand why our sport is so powerful, because it goes far far beyond what's happening on the ice. It's actually what happens beyond the ice that matters.
And would you say it's fair to say that you started as a casual fan and you've become much more in tune with the league since you've been working here?
Absolutely. I was probably the most casual fan, meaning I would tune in for the Stanley Cup playoffs and final, mostly the final, and I was there because it was social and it was fun, etc. I wasn't a follower of hockey, certainly didn't watch regular season hockey. I grew up in Montana, so the boys always played hockey. We didn't have a professional team. So you know, it's been an awesome experience being here because it's an easy sport to fall in love with. And that's why there's so many stories and aspects of the sport that don't get out there. They don't make their way out to new fans and casual fan bases enough that would help, I think, help bring them in and fall in love with hockey just as I have.
So social media is certainly doing that. Let's talk a little bit about that. And your players, if you do a lot of marketing research, would you come back to the fact that your players are what you want to sell?
Well, we do a lot of research, and we look specifically at generational research. We're trying to understand both, especially with casual fans, where our opportunity to grow is, but understanding the differences and similarities between Generation Z and millennials, and really understanding what are their attitudes and perceptions about sports, about media, about technology, and more specifically about hockey, and what are the things that we can do to be and stay relevant with them. And so as we've learned through these conversations, we know a few things. One, sports equals culture. Like, sports is such an integral part of culture, and culture is how young fans sort of identify, create their identities about themselves, and having that knowledge and association and information about sports and about athletes is really important as you create your social currency amongst your friends, right? And our fans know, or these young audiences really know the sport and how athletic it is. They admire it. They know how important and how hard it is to win the Stanley Cup. So we've got a lot of real positive aspects about our sport that are out there. And they admire the avid fans. They actually call our avid fans tribal, and they kind of feel like they're on the outside looking in. And one of the things that we heard from these fans is that they really want to be part of the tribe, but they feel intimidated to ask questions about things like the rules or, you know, understanding the strategies on the ice. And so that was one big aha moment for us, is how can we communicate and connect with fans in a way that will not turn off the avid fans, but will appeal to the younger fans. The second part of that was they don't know who our players are. They call our players like really tough on ice, really quiet off ice. And we know that one-to-one connection fans expect through social media, whether you're an athlete, a musician, a politician, your mom, your friends, that is the norm of how communications and connections and relationships work in today's world. And it's notable that our players are not out there. And one of our missions is to help market our players. But we've got a particular, you know, the beauty of hockey is we have this culture of we're going to play for the name on the front of our sweater, not for the name on the back. It's a cultural, a beautiful cultural moment about our sport. Keeps it pure. It's about the team. We don't want to be a gang of individuals, right? But at the same time, our fans want to know the individuals. So our challenge is, how do we strike that right balance? We're giving the guys the opportunity, our players the opportunity to share their stories, share their lives, their personal lives with the fans who desperately want to know all this information, while at the same time maintaining what's special about hockey with that team first spirit.
Well, it's certainly happened more in the NHL than anywhere else. If you just look at this last season or the last 6 months, where you have Mitch Marner of the Toronto Maple Leafs connecting with that young fan in Toronto, or Damon Severson from the Devils playing rock, paper, scissors with a fan, and then even Carey Price, who could break your heart with a young fan who had lost his mom. And they were very organic. They're mm-hmm. not planned marketing campaigns. They were organic within, you know, what was happening on the ice. And then in that way, social media was able to bring it to the fans.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we look at the performance, meaning the engagement with our social posts, we analyze it all. And as we look at that, we see that highlights do well, but you know what does even better? Those human moments. The Carey Price moment is one of our top most engaged with posts out there. People want to see the humanity side of our players and our fans. And so we call it humans over highlights, right? And we we need to find that right combination. And if you'll look in our social media channels, that's where we're trying to strike that balance. But what we're talking about with the players is even beyond that. Those are still on ice moments where you're seeing that human part. What young people want to understand is they want to know everything about these athletes that they admire so much. They want to know what their workout routine is. They want to know what they're eating. They want to know what their, you know, dogs look like. They want to know what they do for fun. What's their secret talent? And that's the side of the lives that our players are reticent to share, right? And it's not been encouraged in the organization to go put yourself out there, to build a brand for yourself. And our players do such a great amount of community service and just really selfless, community-driven activities that I feel like that could be the center of what they talk about. So it doesn't have to feel like it's a player talking about themselves. It's a talking about the causes that matter to them and what they are doing with their community and their platform to drive awareness and change.
I was amazed to hear that you even have a team, a social media team, in the Situation Room in Toronto on game nights. And you have other teams. You have a dayside team basically in New York City. Tell us about the teams you have.
So first of all, that Situation Room is amazing. Have you been in it?
I have.
Oh, so you know how amazing it is.
And I actually think a lot of people who are listening know the Situation Room and have seen it. And it's a, if you haven't, it's a wall of monitors. Every frame of video, every whistle to whistle, every game is on. And they are watching everything that happens every night. And I think it just goes to show you the importance the league is placing on social media, which really just means reaching their fans, to have the social media be a part of that game night experience.
Yeah, that was a big deal to bring the social media team and our comms team, our stats team in. But it's so important to have that real-time communication of what is happening in the game when it's happening. And you've got games that we have 10 games a night and the nights when you have two games. And it's really important that we are able to do that. One of the new additions that we've added to our in-game team is a gift maker. And this is a fun story. We had this young woman who was just a fan on Twitter. Her name was Stephanie Vale, and she went by at my regular face. And we started noticing she was creating a lot of gifts. And she was creating gifts out of NHL.tv and putting them out there. And she could make gifts faster than anybody.
I just remember working games, and I would go to her to see something. I was definitely someone who, even in working in it, was using her and knew who she was.
Exactly. You are one of the reasons. So a lot of journalists and everyone started to look for those gifts because she was cranking them out so quickly. And so we looked at that and thought about, you know, there's, on one hand, she's, you know, taking IP that's ours and putting it out there, and now it's getting published in all kinds of different publications and broadcasts. On the other hand, she's just a fan. So I called her up. I reached out to her on Twitter, got her phone number. Called her up, and you know, we talked about it and said, you know, you're a super fan. We determined that she wasn't like trying to make money off this or anything. She was just doing it because she loves hockey and she has a really great eye for catching those moments. So we hired her.
That's amazing.
And we gave her dream
story.
Job, and she is doing phenomenally. And we're just so thrilled to have her, and she's continuing to just evolve and create more gifts. We're gonna, you know, continue to have her to do some fun stuff during the off season. But she was just noted in a Tampa newspaper because JT Miller discovered gifts that she'd created of him, and so they did a whole contest of what are your favorite gifts from at NHL gifts. So,
oh, okay.
So
that's
it's
great.
Yeah, it's I love seeing those moments where a young person whose talents are really shining and being noticed by all.
So let's talk a little bit about your story. How did a girl from Montana get to the National Hockey League?
Well, that's a long story. It's a long story. Where do you want to start with that? So I grew up in Montana, and I grew up in Great Falls, which was the big city in Montana.
I was going to say, is that a small town?
85,000 people.
Oh,
and,
that's not that small.
It's not that small. It was actually a nice-sized city. But I laugh because my grandparents lived outside of town in a rural community. And we'd go out there, and my grandpa would always call me a city girl. And I used to be so insulted by, I'm not a city girl. And then here I am, living not only in one city, but two cities in New York and San Francisco. And so I guess I am a city girl. But I have lots of great memories. Montana is a beautiful place if you've never been there. Wonderful place to grow up. I always had the idea that I would not live there forever. I had my eye on expanding my universe in some way. I didn't know how. And so once I left and went to college, I haven't returned.
So did you want to go to law school?
Yes. I started out thinking I was going to be a lawyer and went to the University of Colorado to study. I studied international affairs thinking I'd be a lawyer or a diplomat or something fabulous like that. And I was actually working for a company called Kaplan Test Prep and working off my tuition for the LSAT prep.
Okay.
So there was an LSAT prep course and it was a fun job. And one day I was working on a Saturday and everybody else was having fun and I was working. And I was on the Boulder Mall and decided I had a clever idea. It was a beautiful sunny day and I needed to be at the office all day, but who said the office had to be inside? I moved the office outside. So I grabbed a chair and a table and the phone and pamphlets to pass out to people because you're, you know, taking calls and trying to close leads. And so I just moved my desk outside so I could be in the sunshine with everyone else. Generated more leads than they'd ever generated before. And then it became, you know, I was like, wow, this marketing is pretty cool. It just takes, and you know, just taking the opportunity to think outside the box or think outside the office, if you will, really translated into, or it really tapped into something that I had in me, which is like this drive to make ideas happen, no matter how impossible you think they might be.
What was appealing to you about taking a position at the NHL?
Well, this, when I first started talking with Gary, it was right on the eve of our 100-year anniversary.
Oh, right.
And so the opportunity to work for a major league sport and to usher in the next 100 years of a brand was something, that's a gift. Not very many people have an opportunity like that. And so that, to me, was really appealing. I felt like I had a very different experience in my work experience than that could add value to the league. And I had a lot I could learn from Gary and Bill and my peers here. And so that to me seemed like a good combination of bringing my skill set to the league and then learning from all of these really smart people who are here. And it's been fantastic. Just like the hockey world, the NHL organization has welcomed me in like family, which I appreciate. I didn't know what to expect coming from, you know, coming from across the country, coming from outside of sports into a whole new world and culture, one in which many people have worked, you know, here for 20 years, or the sports world is so small, you go from one league to another or one team to another, and I'm a complete outsider. But they all welcomed me in. In fact, when I first joined, the first two people that welcomed me in were Pam L at NBA and Don Hudson over at NFL. So that was fun to like get that first connection. I was like, we got the women in the leagues are getting together. We got the, you know, organization here. They just, it's been really terrific.
There was a time when you first started that there were four women in the CMO roles.
Yeah.
In these other big sports, in the NBA, in the NFL. Do you feel like you had anything in common with them? Or there was a reason or a good reason for that, or that you saw that?
Yeah, both Pam and Don came from outside sports, right? Pam came from State Farm, and Don, I believe, came from Pepsi. And so I think it's that notion of diversifying your work experience helps bring and expand your thought and how you conduct business. And so that is our common bond that we had. I knew Pam from a previous life, from Pandora. She was one of our great clients when we were there.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, that was great.
So you came to New York, though, from San Francisco, Silicon Valley, Northern California, and you were there at a very exciting time in a lot of startups. And let's start with MySpace, which was, I mean, some of the younger viewers or listeners might not even remember MySpace. That's how early it was, right?
Yeah, that's kind of funny because it was really the first and the biggest success in early days of the social media space. And so I joined MySpace right after Rupert Murdoch purchased it from News Corp and went down. It was one of the original teams to help bring it from super startup phase into a multi-million-dollar business. And MySpace was so interesting because it was the hottest property at the time. It grew so fast that the technology, the servers, could not keep up with the growth of the audience. And what people were finding is they could connect with each other around common interests, even with people they didn't know. And it started out being a place for musicians to be discovered.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Taylor Swift still credits MySpace for her discovery.
Okay.
So people were finding and discovering new music, and then people who loved that music, and then creating, you know, new relationships and communications. But what was special about MySpace, you could customize anything on your page. It was an expression of you. And this is really early days of what we now are is common in our marketing. We were really discovering what it meant to be have a voice as consumers. And this is the millennial generation. We'd never had voices as consumers with brands before. Brands advertised at us, and we never had a mechanism to respond back. All of a sudden, you had the combination of technology, you had your smartphones, and you had platforms like MySpace, and you had audience. You could create and distribute your own content to new audiences. So it really disrupted the whole content and media world at a time when it was really exciting to be a part of, right? And so we were right at the forefront of explaining to a lot of major brands and CMOs why they should participate in MySpace. They saw their kids on it. They didn't understand it, didn't understand why it was, but what value it brought to you and how you could have a two-way dialogue with your customers and with your fans through social media. And it was the first place where people were doing user-generated content. In fact, YouTube, the YouTube player was on MySpace. MySpace helped fuel the growth of
Wow.
YouTube before it was purchased by Google because the MySpace audience was growing so quickly. So there are lots of, it was like the business school of life, all of the wonderful lessons. We helped shape the narrative around what it means to be a brand and have community and be friends and have dialogue and two-way communication and pass along value. So if someone is talking about your brand in their social media, in their MySpace page, what impact does that have on a friend? And even today, when you talk with young people, the number one influence on their purchase decisions happens to be a friend's recommendation. This was just a new place and a new way for people to have recommendations. So MySpace really was the beginning of my fascination with understanding these cultural audiences, these younger audiences, how they were transforming expectations and expectations of brands and how they interact with them. So moving from MySpace to Pandora, another startup that was really the pioneer of personalization, and it's an incredible company if you ever get a chance to learn more about it, but it was founded on this concept of democratizing music. There's so much great music out there and so many great musicians out there who were never heard because there are only a few that made it onto the radio airwaves, right? And so this was an opportunity for a platform for these talented musicians to be heard. Pandora became really critical because it was feeding into a generational desire for personalization. And one of the most interesting aspects of this is all the data that we were able to understand about our listeners at Pandora. So Pandora was on app. It was one of the first apps on the iPhone. And we were embedded in all kinds of technology. We were in the Internet of Things before it was the Internet of Things, embedded in cars. And so we could at any time understand what your favorite music was, what you liked, what you didn't like, what time of day you were listening, what platform you might go to work and set it and forget it. You might go to the gym and listen to different type of music on your iPhone. You might then drive, you know, home and and be listening to kids' music. Maybe you pick your kids up on the way home from work. So there were a lot of really interesting insights that we could take and we could package and help us understand how to market to more customers at Pandora, but also how could advertisers take advantage of this data for targeting and personalization.
So you worked for these two fabulous startups, two really unique companies that really, you know, you were in at the beginning. So is it culture shock when you come to New York and after these brand new companies to work for a hundred-year-old league? You know, on a different coast in a totally different part of the country in a different space, really.
Yeah, I didn't really know what to expect coming to sports after being in the high-tech space. And, you know, the technology world is on such, it's like highly competitive, first to market. You're moving fast, you're breaking things, you're failing, but you're learning and you're optimizing, you're iterating. All of those things happen in nanoseconds, it seems. And so coming to the sports world, I can say the pace is certainly there. The pace and the endurance, if you will, our season is endless, which is wonderful, and I love that part of it. That's what's very similar. Some of the risk taking is a little slower, right? So I've had to slow my roll a little bit on that kind of thing because we're a major league. We're more deliberative in the choices and the decisions that we make and the risks that we take. We do take risks, and I'm really happy to see that because I think that's the way everyone grows. But it is a little slower than it was in the Silicon Valley world.
Right. So I can see you sitting across from Gary Bettman in as you're discussing to come to the league. And I know he loves music. So was there an intersection of hockey or sports and music in your background discussions with him about coming to the league?
So the musical connection, I think, is all about fandom. Right. So at Pandora, we were a listener first organization. And at the NHL, we're a fan first organization. And building your entire business, your philosophy, your principles that guide you around fandom is critical to relating to all generations, but especially the younger generation. And what's interesting about music and sports is they have very similar ecosystems of players. You've got artists, you've got athletes, you've got, you know, the labels, you've got the, you know, the agents, you've got the teams, you've got the, you know, producers. You've got so many different people that are all important in accomplishing the goals on behalf of both the artists and the players, that understanding how to navigate those worlds was something that Gary and I talked a lot about. You also have the advertisers. So having the opportunity to work in a place where we were marketing to consumers, as well as that intersection of monetization, that's exactly what we do here at the league. And so how do you take that fan experience, but also drive, you know, business value for the organization? So I think there are a lot of comparisons between music and sports and a lot of relationships that are similar and actually have even crossed over into my world here, where you rekindle them because now you're just with a different hat. You're in the sports hat, but you're still working with some of the same people in the world.
Well, when you talk about the ecosystem, it's so obvious that you could have a big superstar, even like a Bruce Springsteen, and he will be giddy to meet a New Jersey Devil. And, you know, you have an athlete who might be a big time, you know, Michael Jordan, but if he saw Sting, they have a real admiration for each other.
Absolutely. And music and sports are so integrated into a person's identity, and that reflection of who they are and expression of who they are out to culture. It's important for us to find those intersections. And Steve Mayer is fantastic at identifying. He's been on, you know, both sides. And so he's been critical in helping us think through where are those intersection points. And we have, as you've seen, integrated a lot of entertainment, especially in the Stanley Cup playoffs and final. We've made concerts a big part of what we do to take that celebration of our biggest moment of the season out to fans. And we found that that's another bridge that we have been able to create to bring in casual fans to experience hockey through music and some of these parties and celebrations that we throw.
Where do you do some of your best thinking? Where do you get ideas from?
Well, my best thinking is always in the shower or the commute, right? So I have a lot of commuting time. But I really think ideas come from everywhere. We've got a super collaborative, like marketing's a team sport here at the NHL, as it should be. And we have a very collaborative team and working across all different divisions to come up with ideas. But I think ideas from fans are great. We listen to what our fans have. I think, you know, ideas from younger people are especially important to listen to. And one story that I'd love to share with you is one day, early on when I joined the league, I received a written letter, typewritten letter, in the mail, snail mail, on my desk, which I haven't had a piece of mail in a really long time. And I opened it, and it was this beautifully written letter by a young 11-year-old named Sabrina Solomon.
Wow.
And she said, I read this article about you in the Wall Street Journal, and I understand you're trying to grow your fan base, and you're trying to appeal to younger fans, and I have a bunch of ideas for you, and I just so happen to be on summer break, and I'm just down the street.
I think I remember hearing about this.
Yeah, I'm down the street, and I'll come in, and I'll work for you for free. Well, you know, obviously, she can't come in and work for free. We have legal labor laws around that. But we wrote her back, and I said, you know, so wonderful, thank you. Would love to invite you into the league and to get to meet you. And you know, I assembled this group of people that I thought might be inspiring to her. They're in all different kinds of jobs here, from merchandising to our social impact to marketing and sales and sponsorship. And we brought her in, and I'll be darned, she came to the league with a full-on PowerPoint deck filled with ideas. So we quickly got NHL.com up. They did a little interview with her. So she was written up, you know, had an article written about her. She presented her ideas to all of us. And it was so fascinating because it was the ideas through an 11-year-old's eyes. And they were great ideas. And some of the ideas we were already doing. But that was a huge aha moment because she wasn't seeing. She's a super fan. She knows every rule by the number.
Get out of here.
She does. And she didn't even know we were doing some of these things. And so that's where it became really critical to think through, we can have the best ideas in the world, but if you're not also seeing it through the lens of the audience who's going to receive it,
right?
That's how we're going to evolve and shape and grow our audiences and our marketing. So she inspired an idea, which is a youth fan council called Power Players. And this is where we're going to do a casting call, essentially, for 10 power players to join the league to help be our advisory board on all things ideas related to relating to this younger generation.
That's amazing. That's great.
Yeah, she was fun. Then we introduced her to Gary and Bill, and we had a lovely discussion. She presented her ideas to them as well and gave her and her mom jerseys, and we're in constant communication. But she represents what's so beautiful about this younger generation, because think about it. They grew up with Google at their fingertips from the time they were born. There's no question that ever goes unanswered for this generation. They feel extremely empowered, and many of them start their own businesses before they even leave high school.
Right.
They even graduate from high school.
There's no more, why is the sky blue? They can look it up.
Yeah. But they feel empowered.
Right.
And we call them CEOs because they feel like they can and will change the world. And they're doing it through small businesses, and they're doing it by just having the initiative to reach out to, you know, to me and to others to make sure that their ideas are heard. They have confidence in their ideas.
For sure. I mean, I've had young women and young men all my reporting life ask me, you know, if I could chat or have coffee or what I did to get where I was. I'm sure people ask you all the time, what do you like about that interaction? And what do you tell people now, young people now? Is it a different message than it used to be?
I don't think it's a different message. I always meet with young people, and particularly young women. I believe 15, 30 minutes of coffee time with somebody can make a huge impact. And you don't really think about it too much until you get the dad who comes up to you. A dad came up to me after I was speaking on stage at an event somewhere, and he said, "You don't know me, but you spent a half an hour with my daughter, and you made the biggest impact in her life." And I was like, oh, that's so special. That's why you do it.
Right.
And all you do is just talk about how you got somewhere. My path is going to be different from your path and everyone else's path. And the one piece of advice I give to everybody, which is the most important piece of advice I received, was when I got my first big executive job, you know, making that leap into an executive job. One of my friends said, whatever you do, don't let them change you. You are where you are because of who you are. And that really resonated with me, because you go into these different work environments and cultures and situations, and you're only who you are, right? And for me, it's about being a positive leader. It's about being, you know, acting with kindness, but also being committed to results, right? And so those are the things that I try to bring in with me wherever I go. And I try to, you know, talk to young people about, what are your thing? What are your passion points? What's your brand? What do you want to be known for? You bring that to work every day that you go.
So what's next? What are you working on the horizon? We talked a little bit about having the young fans come, the power players.
Yeah.
What, you know, they always say, you ask an executive what keeps them up at night. You know, the NHL seems in a really good place. I mean, you tell me, are there things that keep you up at night, but is it mostly that you're excited about or that you're worried about?
I'm always excited about I think the one thing that would keep me up at night is I just want to do more than we have capacity to do at any one given time. There's such opportunity, and sometimes we can't get there fast enough. But there are so many things that came out of strategic points that came out of these focus groups that we are focused on as an organization. So number one, doing storytelling around our players. You may have seen our Skates Off episodes where we're doing player profiles, finding out unique attributes or aspects of each one player from every team and telling their story. And those have been incredibly popular. We run them both on broadcast and then we recut and remix them for social media because the attention span on social media is much shorter than it is in other forums. And so we've done a lot of experimenting and learning about what's the right amount of content. Long form and social is 3 minutes, right? And so we're trying to, you know, find the right mix of storytelling in the social media space. We're also trying to do things where we just show the guys having fun. So we do, you know, I don't know if you saw the What's in the Box episode.
Yes.
Where we had Biz Nasty join and we had the players put their hands in a box thinking it was going to be some sort of strange snake or reptile and then having it be some other. And we had millions and millions of views on those videos, but it just gets the guys' faces out there and their personality. And that faces out there is a really important aspect of our objective of storytelling because our guys are on and off the ice so fast. They got their visors on. It's hard for fans and especially new fans to recognize them without their gear. And so we want to bring, again, that human side of it or that personality out and then share it with our fans. So we're continuing to work on content. We have huge content plans for the playoff season. And then we also are looking at how do we connect through culture, through pop culture, because sports equals culture. Other aspects of culture are fashion and music and food, right? And so we're trying to create new cultural connections. So one of the greatest things that we created was our Hockey 101 with Snoop Dogg.
Seriously, like laugh out loud funny. Like you couldn't even get through some of the episodes. He was so funny.
He's hilarious.
He is hilarious.
Yeah, Dog Cherry, the greater one. And he's an incredible talent.
Yes.
And so we had, you know, episodes where he talked about the rules and the traditions and the cup. We found that we were able to reach entirely new audiences and younger audiences with this content. And if you go back to one of the insights from, you know, our earlier fan groups where people really want to be part of the tribe but feel intimidated by it, this content was designed to give you everything you need to know about icing, but in a fun and funny way that's accessible to you because you know who Snoop is. So those are the kinds of things that we're trying to do again to prime the pump for this season.
It was somewhat of a risk, you would think. I mean, I remember seeing it for the first time going, you've got to be kidding, what is Snoop Dogg doing? But you know, it was fabulous. But was there some skepticism or some worry? I mean, a bit of a risk.
Well, it is a little bit of a risk, and we were willing to take it as an experiment to see could we expand beyond our avid fan base. And of course, we monitored everything. We monitored the social media conversation. We monitored the tone. Is it positive or is it negative? What are the conversations happening around it? What's the engagement? Who's engaging with it? And you know, who are we targeting with media to get it out beyond just our avid fans? So if it were going poorly, we would not have continued doing it. But it actually turned out to be such a success. And Snoop is an interesting person because he's one of those people that connects generations. So the younger generation is connected through music to their parents. And so when you think about the Snoop generation, it's really Gen Xers who really grew up with Snoop as part of their core music. And they're the parents of Gen Z. And so that was a good connective tissue that we were able to thread.
Yeah, he's really funny. I'm looking forward to more on that. Emerging technology that we don't even know about yet. What can you tell us?
Well, it's so impossible to be caught up on everything that's happening. I'm most excited about what we're doing here at the league around player and puck tracking.
Oh, right.
That is as emerging as it gets after years and years and years in R&D to be able to have a...
That's research and development for
research
anybody who didn't
know. Research and development, yes. to be able to bring the incredible amount of data to life that I think is going to transform the fan experience, whether it's your broadcast experience or your fan experience. This young generation has just this hunger and thirst for knowing information. Again, it goes back to that social currency. I know something that somebody else doesn't have. I'm first to know, first to share. They'll have this incredible data set that they can tap into, as well as the upcoming ability for sports betting as state by state they start to roll out. This data, this real-time data, can fuel all of those different aspects of a fan experience.
Well, this flew. So thank you so much for doing this. I mean, it's, your energy is infectious. The league's very lucky to have you. And thanks for this chat. I'm going to be looking not just for those stats and everything, but for all the technology and the social networking is awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right.
She is a digital passionista. So our thanks to Heidi Browning, the chief marketing officer of the National Hockey League, for being with us in the executive suite. Don't forget, you can always find the latest edition on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you normally go. And a reminder, if you enjoyed today's conversation, rate and review. Drop us a line. Let us know if you have a guest you'd like to hear that we haven't had on before. Love to hear from you. Love to hear your feedback. And then until next time, I'm Deb Placey in the NHL Executive Suite.